Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu to find more information. The title of today's forum is Upcoming Issues and Advice for Advocates. I'm going to turn it over to Spencer Nitz, the moderator, and he can introduce our panel.
Thank you all for joining us. My name is Spencer Nitz. Like he's mentioned, I am a board member with the Government Relations Board here at the University of Utah. If you have any questions about the Government Relations Board, please contact myself or Allie sitting in the back. Rachel's up here, and we'll also be passing around a clipboard in case you would like to sign up and get some more information. As for introductions, let's begin on my right with Speaker Lockhart. Next to her, we have Senator Robles. Next to her, we have President Wayne Niederhauser. And on the far left, we have no political ideology meant there. On the left, we have.
I think we sat appropriately.
I'm center left.
We have
maybe you ought to switch.
We have Representative Minority Leader Jennifer Selig, who represents District 23. So if I could just get a brief introduction, starting with the speaker, about who you are, how you got introduced into public service, and why you're here.
Oh, okay. So I represent District 64 in Utah County, which right now consists of geographically Northern Springville and Southern Provo. So that's my geographically District 64. I've been in the House of Representatives for 14 years, going on 16. I've been the Speaker for one term, so this is my second term as being Speaker of the House. I've also served as the Rules Chair, the Appropriations Committee Vice Chair, and before being Speaker, I was the Assistant Majority Whip in the House as well. So I've spent a lot of time getting to know the budget and everything that goes on up at the Capitol. I got into public service. I got involved. There's a couple of ways to get involved in public service. The route that I took was I got involved heavily at the party level, initially at the county party level with the Republican Party, and set up chairs and blew up balloons and chaired dinners and all those kinds of things that you do when you're a volunteer in a party. And that's how I got involved and was a legislative district chair, and had always thought that someday, maybe when I was a grandma, I would be in the legislature. And it just happened that it happened a lot earlier for me. So,
My name is Luz Robles. I'm the state senator representing District 1. It's basically the west side of Salt Lake City, Rose Park, Glendale, Poplar Grove, a big portion of West Valley, and a small portion of Magna. That's the new district as of this year. I got elected in 2008, graduated from the University of Utah, and I started getting more involved in advocacy work, mostly dealing with just achievement gap issues at our public school systems and healthcare, health disparities. And from there, worked for an organization called Utah Issues that it doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, but I started working on issues related to low-income inequality and social justice issues, and went to work for Governor John Huntsman. And from there, I went to the private sector and saw the opportunity to represent the west side of Salt Lake City and end up getting elected in 2008. And I'm also the minority caucus manager right now, so we're a small group in the Senate Democrats. Looking forward to working with our bigger caucus colleagues on the other side of the aisle.
And we look forward to working
with you also.
I'm Wayne Niederhauser, President of the Senate. I was elected in 2006. I represent Sandy, a little bit of Cottonwood Heights, Snowbird, and Alta. And Snowbird tends to get a disproportionate share of my time, the constituents there. I was how I got into politics. Well, I'd been active in the party, but an opportunity came up with a retiring senator in Sandy, that an open seat, so to speak, and myself and a lot of other people decided to run for that seat back in 2006. It is still historically and holds the record even to today as the most expensive legislative race in Utah. And I had a tough convention race, a tough primary race, and a tough general race. And I think at the end of the day, when we add up all the parties spent on that race, it was almost $500,000. And that pales comparative to some states, but in Utah, that was a lot of money to be running a legislative race. I'm originally from Logan, so I grew up in Utah. I'm a Utah State graduate. I have a master's degree in accounting, and professionally, I'm a CPA.
I'm Jennifer Selig. I represent District 23 in Salt Lake City. So those are that includes the neighborhoods of Rose Park, Fair Park, Poplar Grove, Jordan Meadows, and West Point. I've been in office since 2006. I was appointed and then elected for 2-year terms after that. My entrance into politics came after my entrance into government. My education and professional experience is actually in budget and policy for municipal governments, and I worked for the City of Salt Lake for almost a decade, and then the Utah League of Cities and Towns. And then when I moved to the private sector, I took the opportunity to get involved politically, and that was while I was still a master's student here. So I got involved in the Democratic Party. And then after that, the party asked me to run for office, and I was asked probably about 6 times and said no 5 of the 6 times because I had started into the doctorate program here in political theory and public administration. So that's how I got into the political realm. Prior to actually working for government, I also was involved in nonprofits as a volunteer. So that's also a way that I got involved and spent my time in the public sphere.
Thank you all for your introductions. Now we'll begin with the actual questions. We'll start on the left this time with Representative Selig. What are your overall goals or guiding principles for the 2013 legislative session? Do you have any specific targets that you're wanting to hit?
Okay. Well, we want to keep Utah strong, and what we mean by that, and what I mean by that, is making sure, in large part, that every Utahn has an equal chance to succeed and to be self-sustaining. I want to focus on making sure that we have healthy communities, and that includes the environment. It also means public safety, that we have a strong public education system, that we have a strong economy. And that will all need to be done on a balanced, sustainable budget as well. So that's what we're focused on. Also, during that time, I think that because, and we'll probably talk a little bit about this or a little bit more about this related to budgetary issues and interplay with the federal government, when there is a lot of stress in our system, oftentimes the smaller voices or the less powerful voices in our communities and in our state and federally go unheard. So it is very, very important to me to make sure that we actively listen and seek out those voices to make sure that everyone is represented in a fair and just way.
Thank you, Representative President.
Well, I reflect a lot of the things that Representative Selig said. We need to make sure that we have a strong economy and we have a strong education system. We need to educate our workforce, and that's, I think, top priority. We need to make sure that we keep a fiscally sound government. The state of Utah has always been a conservative in their budgeting and in their finances, and it's to our credit. And we're one of only five, maybe seven states that have had a AAA bond rating since they've rated states. And so it's been a cultural issue for the Utah legislature. Even when the Democratic Party were in control of the legislature, they were very sound in their fiscal policy. And so we want to continue to make sure that we keep our debt low, our taxes low, and also to make sure we're balancing a budget. But for me, I think the thing I'd like to see us do more, which is a little bit outside the nature of legislatures, and Utah's done a pretty good job with this, and I hope just to see us do it a little bit better, and that is with seeing things in the long term. So what is our education system going to look like in 10 years? What does our transportation system need to look like? Let's figure out what the long term is for those systems. And then, in that context, establish policies that get us there. Too often I've seen as a legislator in the 6 years I've been there that I'm voting on issues that I don't know the context. I don't know where we're headed with that issue. And does this fit in with that? And so I think we need to have some more discussion on where we're headed and then get behind that direction so that we can reach that vision for what we'd like to see Utah like in 5 or 10 years and maybe even longer.
Thank you. Senator Robles?
Thanks. I think for the long term, I like what the president talked about, the long term. I know the Senate Democrats, we're a group of five now. Our caucus is very small, so we are looking forward, number one. We want to make sure we are part of that discussion, and we've always, at least in the Senate, felt very comfortable in being part of that decision process, and we are looking forward to continue that process and that relationship with our majority caucus. Number two, education is our top priority. I think the state of Utah continues to grow and our economy is getting stronger, but we are going to rely on all of the youth and many of you getting into the workforce, so we need to make sure education continues to be a priority for the state. We have a large number of children, which is great, because then we have a lot of potential great labor force, but we need to invest in them. So we need to be better in planning ahead 10, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, and we want to be part of that conversation. We certainly want to continue working with the governor and the entire legislature in that direction. Another thing for this next year is Medicaid and health care. As we move towards the implementation of ACA, we're going to have to make some decisions as a state. And Medicaid expansion is one of those issues that continues to be and will be probably one of, a big conversation during the session, and we're certainly looking forward to getting more data related to Utah. As much as there could be national conversations, we certainly want to be, number one, attentive to what could happen to Utah and whether that's how does Medicaid expansion may impact the state or not, and those sort of things that are priorities for our caucus and for me personally as well.
Thank you.
So I agree that these are issues that have but in the House, I think we're just going to try to survive. We have so many new members this term. It's really unprecedented. And actually, if you look at the numbers, there are 61 members of the Republican caucus in the House, 31 of which have 2 years or less experience. So and then we have one Democrat freshman. Is there anyone appointed? A couple of people who are 2 years or less, right? So if you start adding that up, it's 31, 32, 33, 34 people in the House. Representatives have 2 years or less experience. That's half the House. So I'm looking forward to mentoring them, teaching them process, making sure that they become effective in representing their constituents, bringing forward the issues that they have. So that's really going to probably consume a lot of my time in terms of the process of the legislature and the process of the House,
is making sure that everybody kind of knows how it works and everybody can work together and work through their issues. I am a process person, and to me it's about bringing things forward and having the great debates. And my favorite times in the House are when I am lucky enough to sit up in front and watch the great debates. I mean, we had a couple of them last year. One of them had to do with the checkpoint debate. Do you remember the checkpoint debate? It was a couple of hours long. I mean, we can roll our eyes based on what happened or whatever. But it was in the House. We actually, there were legitimate positions on both sides, and people were serious, and we were all quiet and listening to what each other had to say. And we were talking about, the Fourth Amendment and, other parts of the Constitution and our civil rights and our individual rights, but the right to have law enforcement, protect us and all these kinds of things. And it was just one of those debates where when that was over, I felt really proud to be part of the House of Representatives, because it was just one of those times that I think if all the people could see that we really do that, we really do have serious debate about the issues of our day, I was really proud of that. So that's gonna consume a lot of what I do process-wise.
Okay. So we've handled some generalities, but let's nail down some specifics. What do you expect to be important proposals or issues within each of your individual caucuses that are going to be arisen during the legislative session? Let's begin with the speaker this time.
Well, the Republican caucus met in December. Excuse me. So it was a little bit early for us to come up with any kind of caucus positions on any of the issues, because we saw that the fiscal cliff issue was still looming at that point. We weren't sure exactly what Congress was going to do or not do, which is usually what they do. And so we didn't really have any kind of hard and fast positions at that point. Of course, Republicans are going to be about, not raising taxes, and education has always been our priority. It will continue to be our priority, and we're going to be looking at ways that we can make sure that the investment that we make in education will result in the outcomes that we know we need. And so we'll be looking there. We'll obviously, the senator talked about health care. That's an issue we're going to talk very seriously about. So that's a couple of things.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
I think in terms of issues for our caucus, I can actually name them because there's only five of them.
Five
issues, one per member. No. Our minority leader, Senator Jean Davis, will be focusing on animal rights and just protecting, making sure there's some better ways of dealing with protecting animals and making sure there's tied, if necessary, to other type of violent crimes. And I know he'll be working on some of those issues with shelters, and it's exciting. He was mentioning them. Usually some of the members of leadership, and they can probably speak better with their years of experience in leadership, it's hard to run bills when you're trying, because we have to deal with a budget. We have extra meetings beyond the regular meetings of a legislator, with executive appropriations and so forth. So you tend to run less number of bills to focus on everything else. I'm sure the president's going to be busy hearing all of us coming with our bills to him and for guidance. But we're going to do Medicaid. Like I said, I think healthcare is going to be a big issue. And a lot of it is going to be limited because, of course, now we have ACA, so it's just how the state is going to implement them. But there's going to be a lot of discussions with regards to the budget and healthcare. I'm actually going to be focusing on some bullying and parental involvement when it comes to suicide in K-12. And, mm-hmm. And this has to do a lot with some of the incidents we had. And former President Waters and I had a couple of meetings prior to him stepping down from the Senate and just trying to find some solutions to that. So that will be some of the issues I'll be focusing on, and after-school programs as well as a preventive mechanism, and actually helping reduce high school dropout rates and making sure our kids are more college prepared. I believe there's a lot of work we can do between 3 and 5 p.m. when we tend to see a lot of our children getting in trouble, actually, not only safety issues, but also, you know, they could do more to help them graduate and be better prepared for college or any other higher education. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things I know. Senator Karen Main, she's representing the West Side as well, West Valley, and parts of Cairns. She's going to be in Taylorsville. She's going to be focusing on employment law. I mean, something that she's been working on for many, many years. And so it's just trying to close some loops when it comes to the way our structure is with the Department of Commerce and how we structure businesses and how you have people, you know, report employment so they can protect those employees as well. And we have a new senator that just got appointed, and that's Senator Jim DeBacchus. He got appointed after Senator Ben McAdams now got elected to the mayor, being the mayor of the county. I think he's going to be, he's obviously, as a freshman, he wants to focus on learning process, so he's probably going to only be interested in running a bill. He mentioned something with regards to just ethics and pieces like that. So Senator Pat Jones will be working on education. So that's, you know, we're such a small group, but we're going to try to cover all the issues. But I think those are some things you're going to be hearing from our caucus during the session.
Thank you, Senator. President?
The biggest issue we deal with every year is the budget, and it gets overshadowed by things like alcohol or gun law or immigration. But we're mainly there to pass a budget, and we do that in 45 days. We're pretty efficient with it. We have a system where every member of the legislature sits on an appropriation committee, and that's unique across the country. But it's great to have everybody involved in that process. In my time in the legislature, the 6 years, I have seen billion-dollar surpluses, and I've seen $500 million deficits as we went into the Great Recession, riding on a real estate bubble that had generated a lot of revenues. And so I have seen some of the things that make for good budgeting policy and also help us to avoid some of the pitfalls that might come in the future. We were only able to make it through the Great Recession because we had a healthy rainy day fund and an additional $100 million that was in savings for education. And we had avoided bonding as much as possible and we only bond in Utah, not for operations. We only bond for a building or for a road. So these are infrastructure bonds, but we had paid a lot we paid for a lot of roads, we paid for a lot of buildings out of cash because we had a lot of extra cash when we have billion-dollar surpluses. And that then lowered our threshold for give us more bonding capacity in the future, and we needed that over the Great Recession. And so our caucus, as we've met, there's a lot of other issues that we'll deal with, but the biggest issue is the budget. We want to make sure we have a balanced budget. We're deeply concerned, even though I've seen the high highs and the low lows, I'm more nervous about our revenue forecast than I ever have before, because we don't know what the federal government's going to do with the so-called fiscal cliff. And they've got some deadlines. One was January 1st. And got another deadline is March 1st. And what are they going to do? But what they do affects our revenue. We had a forecast of $300 million new dollars in ongoing funds, plus $120 in what we call one-time funds to deal with in this legislative session. But had the fiscal cliff happened, we were actually going to be in the negative. So we can have that much, that kind of a swing. And so we're really nervous about spending all the money during the session that might be forecasted to come into Utah until we know what the federal government's going to do, because what they do is going to affect our budget in many ways. And so I suspect that we'll be looking at trying to put some money aside. We'll probably not do any bonding. It's not our favor to do any bonding this year, to help bring down that threshold to give us some room in the future if we hit a dip in the road. So we're going to take care of the fiscal house and make sure we have a that we're going to be stable in our revenue and in our expenses going forward. We're going to be able to afford those things. So we're going to be careful. But, you know, there are some pending issues that we need to make sure we're looking at, and that is, you know, education growth is important to us. And we'll see how it ends up in March. But we're going to be very cautious when it comes to the money this year, even though there's some tremendous needs out there. And we mentioned, you know, Medicaid expansion and all those things. That all is going to add additional budget. And when you look at the general fund, the higher ed's paid out of the general fund and the education fund. We have roads, we have social services. And when you start to expand programs, you know, it also is going to affect what money goes to some of the other areas. And those are a lot of the issues that come with the budget.
Thank you. Representative Selig?
I am really excited to be part of an efficient and effective high-powered caucus in the House. The House Democrats are great. And what you'll see from us will not only be defined as bill introductions, because there's so much more that we do. There's also the evaluation of the budget issues that we've talked about, and also inquiry. So asking constructively critical questions during committee process and teasing out some of the other issues that come to play. We're focused, of course, on education. You'll see us talking about P through 16 and the continuum of education, not only in traditional public education means in university, preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, and higher ed, but also in alternative professional training, too, with applied technology centers and other opportunities for people to be able to be self-sustaining within our community, culture, and economy. Economy, we're always interested in Utah growth, and we like to talk about small business and what their contribution to our communities are, as well as discussing education within the terms of building a strong economy. I mentioned health earlier, and Senator Robles hit on the Affordable Care Act and the importance of that. So we'll spend a lot of time thinking about the implications related to the ACA and to Medicaid. Also with individual bills like smoking in cars with small children. You'll, of course, see that. Also public safety, safe schools, and also, as Senator Niederhauser hit on, infrastructure. Safe schools not only means what occurs within the classrooms and the halls, but the bricks and mortar structures, too. Are we making sure that we have a safe infrastructure for everyone, not only within the schools, but also on our roads and so forth? Infrastructure is an interesting topic because it's not so sexy, particularly when it deals with things that are underground or shoring up buildings that already exist, because there's not a big ribbon cutting or something new and shiny. A lot of it's just maintaining what we have. And it's kind of like having a party for your friends and inviting them over because you got a new water heater, right? I mean, so how exciting is that? But it is something that you need. So we need to have those discussions and make sure that we plan appropriately. And lastly, certainly not in importance, but on my list today would relate to environment and what that means for our economy related to our natural resources and how we attract funds and visitors related to that. We also want to support the task force. This is going on that it is evaluating clean air and notions of what it means to be a healthy community and how we can support that. And good governance. That's what you'll see from us.
All right, thank you. Next, many of us here are students, if not all of us. Government may seem a little inapproachable to those of us who have never been involved in it before. What advice do you have for students in order to get involved and have an effective role on the legislative process? Let's begin here with Representative Selig.
I have a point of order, sir. So you are taking turns, starting between the good speaker and myself, but yet our colleagues in the middle have not had an opportunity to lead out on such questions. How would you respond?
Would either of the senators like to begin this third question?
I'll go ahead.
President. Right. The president.
Reluctantly.
This is why the House is so much more exciting than the
Senate. We are so much more approachable.
You want exciting excitement on the front end, on the back end, and boring in the middle. The best thing that I think that you can do is just to get involved. I offer to a lot of constituents that have some interest, come and job shadow me for one day or a half a day. Learn.
I want to jump shadow you. Sit in any of those meetings.
And I've done that quite a bit over the years. I mean, I have to limit that to some degree, but I'll entertain, you know, half a dozen to 10 people during the legislative session that wants to come up and just follow me around for a half a day. And they always leave saying, wow, I never have never understood the process up here. And it just is it's an excitement for them. We've had many of you here. Many of you great students have been interns at the legislature. Spencer spent some time there, and I think some others are your upcoming intern. Great way to get involved in a campaign. Many of our legislators got into politics by getting involved in a presidential campaign or a city council person or a mayor or something like that. So it's important that you get involved, and not just as a youth or as a young adult, but as an adult, as parents, as whatever you do in your life, continue to be involved. It's important that the public is engaged, and a lot of our problems come when they're not engaged, and we hope that that people will get excited about that process. That's what the Constitution is about. It's a document of process, both the state and the federal government, and any person of any mind can bring an issue to the legislature. And if they can find a sponsor, we have processes to address that. And that's America. And we don't limit what we hear or what we don't hear. There's a process to deal with everything that comes before us, and I love that. So, and we need more people loving it.
You know, I think that's, the legislative process is, for me, the most exciting process. I have people ask, well, why the legislature? Is because you can see, you know, remember the cartoon of how a bill becomes a law, and it starts walking as he enters, it's like the Capitol. It is like that.
You just dated yourself.
I know the song, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just think it's like one of the best ideas, because it's really just what makes America so wonderful is this process. This legislative process is one of those key pieces because of the Constitution, because of the Utah Constitution, the ability to make a difference at a your community level and then a statewide level. It's impressive and amazing. I have, my intern is here, actually. He's probably texting. But Mario, he at University of Utah. So students have a great opportunity with our intern program to get involved through campaigns and also during the legislative process. But what I always tell people is we have a great website. I mean, we actually are very accessible as a legislative body. And I had a chance to talk to other colleagues that are legislators in other parts of the country, and it's not as, I mean, they have more of a, it's more difficult to get to them. For us, we're citizen legislature, meaning we're all common citizens. We work, we actually may be colleagues at a workplace with some of you. I work for Science Bank, so I get to talk to a lot of people that I work at the bank, that, you know, tellers to vice presidents of a bank, and we're working with them, so we get the real life issues because we're normal citizens like all of you are. And so we half of our time, it's a part-time job, so we do have full-time jobs. And I think that also makes us more human. So call us. I mean, I had people knocking, we have our phones, our addresses, they're all public information. People say, are you scared? I'm like, no, I really like when people approach you and they say, hey, I know you're my state senator. They knock on your door. I mean, that has happened to me. Don't do it at midnight. That can be a little bit scary. But
it's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Like, but, you know, just the idea that that it may be your neighbor. I mean, it's your neighbor that's your representative. It's, I think, the best part of living in Utah. We're still a small state that we can have that in place. We still represent small groups. I mean, you think California, a Senate seat in California is bigger than a congressional district. So, you know, for them, it's a little bit of a different story. So I encourage all of Utahns to take advantage of that. It's a great opportunity to get involved. So our website streams live all of our committee hearings, and those are audio. And our chamber time, it's a video. So you get to see us in action. And that's, people love doing that at work. And they will text me. It's like, hey, I just heard about this bill. I live in your district, or email you. And we actually have a great mechanism of responding. I mean, I think most legislators are great responding to their constituents. I've hardly met anyone that said, oh, I don't care about responding. All of them care. Key number one is tell them that you're the constituent. I mean, I think it helps because we get so many emails. But if I see someone says, I'm your constituent, I live in your district, you're going to obviously prioritize those. I mean, you try to respond as much as possible, but I will always prioritize my constituents. Those are people that get me elected, and I respond to them, number one. So let your legislator know that you live in their district. Two, you know, be respectful. I think respect, it comes both ways. And, you know, you may feel very passionate about an issue. And for that legislator, it may be also a very passionate issue, or maybe one of 1,000 issues that we're reviewing in a session. Because that's how many bills we usually review in 45 days, aside from the budget process. So I want to respond to you, and if you're respectful, it's easier for me to and get the information, and we'll get back to you. I mean, I think most of, like I said, most of them do. So, you know, let them know, be respectful, and just know that they also have a family and a job, most of us do. And so as you enter into that relationship with a legislator, which I think is valuable, or the legislative process itself, respect comes both ways, and it makes a big difference. And as students, we want to hear from you because you guys are the future of the state, really. I mean, like I said, I'm looking forward to, you know, if I retire, that you guys are going to now take on everything else that we're doing right now and make our country even better. So it's that engagement that I think it's important. But just, you know, you guys know it's available online. All of our bills are available online. And also, there's a notification of 24 hours prior to any meeting. So any item that we discuss, we have to by law notified through our website 24 hours in advance that we're going to be reviewing that bill. So, you know, there's opportunity for you to get engaged that way as well.
Either one of you?
The speaker, I have the last word.
There'll be nothing left to say.
One, please get involved, because if you don't, someone else will, and their voice will be the last one. And then your vision of who you are, who your family is, our communities, our state will be lost, and we need you. We need you and all of your individual talents, skills, abilities, and creativity to help co-create who we are going to be as a species and culture going forward. So please participate, because again, if you don't show up, someone else is. And you may not like what they have to say. Okay? Secondly, what you say matters. It matters because you're part of a democracy and you exist in our community and you have experience with this public policy. As a person that lives here, you don't have to be a public policy expert related to a particular piece of code to come and testify, to contact us, either through phone, person, or email. You just have to be. Things touch our lives in so many ways. And how that impacts you matters and is legitimate. So please let us know. We depend on your voice, your experience, and your perception in order to weigh all of these public policy issues. We are just human beings who have lived one life, or maybe others, depending on your particular philosophical bent. But we cannot possibly consider everything. So we need you for that. recognize the barriers that are set up to the system to cause you fear and trepidation sometimes. 1, marble. 2, dark wood. 3, suits. 4, meetings during the day when you probably have to work or be in class. Okay? We have such a beautiful building with so much history and honor that goes back to the people that started this state. And it honors us, all of us, as a community. Those things are important. They can also be viewed sometimes, again, as a barrier. Sometimes if you don't look the way that other people look, or if you've got a bunch of people who are sitting up higher than you, or sitting behind a whole bunch of fancy wood or marble, it may be intimidating. Recognize that that's normal. Talk through it. Show up. Tell us what you think. Because, again, it's important. And really, a lot of times, who we hear from, or the people from whom we hear, rather, are not from around here. And so we yearn to hear from people in our own communities and in our state. Oftentimes that's a rarity on bills, because so many other people have so many interests and stuff. So again, please speak up. Oh, one thing that we did bring, all of us, as a tool, are these little cards that are back there by the sign-in that has our website on it and some other information that if it so moves you, please carry it around in your purse or wallet and feel free to look us up, call us at any time. Because, again, it's important.
Thank you.
Speaker. So, like I said, there's not a lot left to say. I'm glad that the minority leader mentioned the wood and the marble and the all of that, because I have served long enough to have served in the Capitol before we did the restoration, during it, and now after. And the committee rooms used to be much more conducive to, you felt like you were part of the people who were there to talk, and now with the restoration, it's true. The members of the committees are up higher than the members of the public. And we're behind these large, dark wood desks. And I have thought many times as I've gone into those rooms, this is just, it's like the Inquisition for people who come to testify. I can't imagine, because as members of the legislature, if we sponsor a bill, we ourselves have to sit at the witness table, if you will, and present our bill to our own colleagues. Or to, as a member of the House, if our bill happens to pass the House, we have to go and sit before a Senate committee and present our issue, or, you know, present our bill to the Senate. And even for us, it's intimidating. It's kind of scary to sit there. And so I think to myself, how would a member of the public feel? And I just have to say, I didn't design the rooms. I would have done it very differently, and I do feel badly that it is set up in such a way that makes it very intimidating, I think, for the general public. I wish that was different. So other than that, I mean, go to the website, contact us. We do want to hear from you. We're there full-time for 46 days. Well, 45, but with one day off for President's Day. And please come up and engage.
Thank you. We now have about 5 minutes for questions from the audience. So if anyone has any questions, please raise their hand and then we'll get to you. Let's begin with the man up in the second row here.
So just please remember to speak directly into the microphone and just say a little bit about yourself.
My name is Kyler Bowers. I'm a political science major. My question is about the boxcar bills, which basically allow a legislator to open a bill file which can be introduced later, even at the last minute. And this has stirred up controversy with the grandma bill and the sex ed bill. It seems like one of the few checks on the Republican supermajority is public outrage. So what are each of your positions on Senator Osmond's proposal to end this practice of boxcar bills?
Keep in mind we have about 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll start. You mentioned two bills, the sex ed bill and the grandma bill. as examples of maybe an abuse of Boxcar, and I would submit to you that the process worked, that the public outrage did work. Both of those bills were repealed. The process actually does work. Sometimes it's extremely messy, but it did work. So on the issue specifically of boxcars, historically, boxcars have been, there weren't very many of them, and they were out there to be used basically generally by leadership in terms of when you come to the end of the session and you have a $13 billion budget and you need to fund something or not fund something, and it takes a change in state law to do that, a statutory change. You can't do that in an Appropriations Act, so you need a bill to throw in that statutory change that you didn't anticipate at the beginning of the session. That's the historic use of a boxcar, was an ability to get that done and get that done quickly when you're trying to wrap up the budget. Through the last few years, yes, that has been abused a bit. I would admit straight out, yeah, in some ways it has been abused. But the examples that you use as the horrible abuse of a boxcar, I would submit that the system worked.
You know, I haven't seen Senator Ossman's proposal, but I've heard on the news a little bit. I'll say that I agree with the speaker in terms of the reason why that boxcar is there for. So one of the things that she missed to mention is we have a deadline. So there's deadlines on when you can file for a bill. So let's say there may be a budgetary issue that cannot be addressed through an appropriation process, and you need a bill for that because you're going to change statute. Because we already have, the deadlines have passed for us to do that, we may end up in a situation where that is not being taken care of. So maybe we need to address some process question or put more restrictions on the boxcar. But I think there is a place for something like that, for what she just explained, that I've been a witness in the last 4 years that I've been there, where you really need that bill, and thank goodness we had it there for that purpose. And then just another point is most boxcars will have, I mean, you'll know what the bills are. I mean, you have to put a purpose for that. So it's not like this random, you know, I don't know. You may say healthcare on this, or, I mean, you know, I mean, you just do it in case you need that for that purpose. So it's been abused, I agree, lately. And maybe we just need to review the process. But I don't know that you want to get rid of the whole thing. I mean, I haven't seen his proposal. So in fairness, I can't speak on Senator Osman's bill.
Let's just do the next question.
Next question? Okay.
Or do you want
to? I'll just be quick. I'm all about values of good governance, public participation, transparency. I agree that it's been used maybe unfairly in some ways. I can't comment on the bills itself, though. And again, the devil's in the details. It's my understanding that there's a component of the bill that would, and again, I haven't read it, this is what I've been told, that there would be some sort of mechanism where it would require 2/3 of a vote in both houses to open one. When you're a part of the minority party, how do you garner 2/3 of a vote? I don't want to inadvertently end up diminishing the voices that we represent already by doing that. So again, I think that it's really important in the analysis, in the constructive, critical analysis of these things, to make sure that all the language is covered in a way that's helpful to everyone. So thanks for the question, though. It's a good one.
Thank you. One more question before we close up.
I think you're going to have to close.
We'll have to close? Okay. I apologize. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and I'd also like to thank our guests. If we could join me in thanking them. Thank you.